Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we also are rebroadcast on A2Zen.fm on Sundays at 3 p.m. and archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. Plenty of opportunities for you to hear this program, not only when it's broadcast, but also in the archive section. You can go there anytime. Check out any or all of our guests. See what they have to say. Check out their websites. We are linked to them so that you can gather further information. And we encourage you to do that because you need to find out what's working for you, what's resonating for you. And we're very excited about that opportunity to provide that information. And I have to say, it's really exciting to be able to basically conduct these interviews because I get the chance to meet so many incredible people. Like the folks we're going to have on the program today, George and Sedina, and the last name is Capanelli, if I'm correct. Did I get that right?
You did. You did a great job, Richard.
Capanelli. I always try to get the names correctly. People were given the names, and I think it's just the height of respect to try to get the name correctly, no matter what part of the world you're from, let alone parts of the country. Yes. So it's great to have you, and I know that Sedina is going to join us in just a little bit. But you and Sedina have put together an interesting concept and book, which is Do Not Go Quietly. Now, that particular phrase is familiar to me. Why is that familiar to me?
Well, because one of Dylan Thomas's well-loved poems has the title "Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night," and so that may be one of the reasons it's familiar to you.
Now, you and your wife have put this aspect together in this book, "Do Not Go Quietly," dealing with those of us. And it's funny how, when I used to do interviews, speaking of folks over 50, I was under 50, so I could never consider myself a part of that group. Today I can.
It's amazing how quickly it happens. Huh?
It is. And yet at the same time, I would venture that you, as well as Sedina, she would probably be able to say the same thing, that inside, we don't feel that. I mean, I tell people I still feel 17 on the inside, but I remember that my body is three times older than that, and then I have to be careful.
It's true. It's true. And sometimes I think when I respond in a particular way emotionally to some circumstances, I'm a lot younger than 17, you know. So, but it's true. I think from the inside looking out, I don't perceive the world to be any different. I mean, it has changed dramatically over the years, but the eyes that are looking out do not look out from, in my case, a 70-year-old person.
Right. Well, my father, when he turns 70, and I was actually more excited about it than he was. I was telling everyone, oh, my dad's 70. You know, maybe because I was proud of the fact that he was able to live so long and he was still doing the things that he loved doing, traveling and exercising with my mom and all of that. And so at the dinner table one evening, I asked him, I said, so, Dad, how's it feel to be 70? And I loved his response. He says, well, I didn't expect to live this long, but I am glad I'm here. So, and now he's going to be 82 this year. You know, and the fact of the matter is that from the day we are born, we're aging. There's no question about it. But this program isn't necessarily about gerontology and the aging of our society as much as it is the fact that we, above 50, as well as those who are below 50, we want a different world. We're not really content and happy with the world in which we live. There would be those, George, who would argue with you and say, well, you know, that's the first step, George. You really need to just accept the world the way that it is, you know, and stop trying to change it all the time. And they would say the same thing of me because this program is about finding those new ways of living. Well, it sounds to me like you folks are too, and that it is possible. Tell us about the journey that's brought you here.
Well, you know, we began, Sedina and I have been involved in learning all of our lives. You know, some people think school ends with, you know, high school or college or graduate school or whatnot. But for us, the whole world is a giant school, and we're always in class of some kind or another, increasing a skill set, changing a belief system, developing new attitudes and perceptions, learning lessons that we've come here to learn. So in our case, it's been a journey from the beginning. You said it before, you know, people are aging from the moment they're born, and we believe that the choice is, do you live consciously and age wisely, no matter what your chronological age is, or do you throw in the towel at any age and figure that that's it, you know, that's as much as you want to do or learn or be. One of the learnings that happened for us along the way is that we made passages with both sets of our parents, late in life and then end of life passages. And when we did, Richard, we just, we were shocked, shocked at how unprepared the world is for people who age. There isn't a blueprint, there isn't a script to follow. Everyone has to kind of make it up as they go. The healthcare system isn't really well prepared. The life care system isn't really well prepared. And so we found ourselves struggling as we became the decision makers and the individuals responsible for our parents. We found ourselves in a quandary, inordinately expensive, just to keep my parents in their family home with full-time care. And this was in the early 90s, was between $15,000 and $20,000 a month.
Wow.
And the availability of quality private caregivers isn't that large. Now, some things have changed, but the fact is that the system is already groaning under the weight of a demographic revolution, and we haven't even arrived at the point, the peak of that demographic revolution, where there'll be 50%, some experts say, of our population will be 50 and over for the first time in history. So that wake-up call sent us on a quest. How could we do it better? How could we contribute? And one of the results of that quest is this book and the company that we've formed called Age Nation.
Well, now, it seems to me that anybody really could be a part of this because, you know, yeah, we're all aging. But your focus does seem to be more so on those over 50. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. Our key is on older Gen Xers, boomers, and elders. But we also speak to this cross-generational collaboration that has to take place because, you know, there's an enormous similarity in values and commitment to living between the millennials and the older boomers. We believe that to deal with the implications of this graying of the world population, one of the things that we're going to have to do is create whole new engagements between and across the generations.
From your observation, do you feel that you have actually made those sort of those inroads, if you will, that it's starting to happen?
No, I think the conversation is certainly deepening. When Sedina and I formed Age Nation, which was in 2009, it was not an easy conversation to have, whether with leaders in government or business or people in the general public. But I think that as this demographic revolution occurs, as we see instances all around the world, and it's not just a revolution in the U.S., it's happening in every industrial country in the world, and some of them are ahead of us in this demographic revolution. So you see things happening in Greece and France and Spain and Italy and Britain and Japan and in other countries where the impact of this graying of the population is happening. And so now people are beginning to be more receptive. They're more open to the conversation. here in the United States, it's still an economic conversation. You know, people on the left, people on the right, they argue with one another about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Do we eliminate it? Do we privatize it? Do we reduce it? Do we expand it? But in reality, the implications are so much greater than that. And so one of the things we're trying to do is broaden that conversation.
Well, I have to say that that conversation is something that, from my perspective, and I actually started feeling this way going back, you know, when I was in my, I was telling people this in my 20s and 30s, that I wasn't going to, the only thing that I was ever going to retire was going to be my car. That, and this a little crude here, but they would have to peel my cold dead carcass off the radio console because I was lucky enough, as I have been told, to find my path early on. I diverted from it a couple of times only because I felt like I needed a little rest. But not everybody has that privilege, if you will, or that opportunity. And I'm wondering, are there a lot of people out there now over 50 who are, you know, I hope they aren't going to wait until the Grandma Moses age to make it happen. I mean, she was, what was she, 84, 89 or something like that before she started painting?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I'm like I said, I've been fortunate to, as I say, be in the right place at the right time to have the things happen for me and to me and what have you. So what about you and Sedina in that context? How do you feel in regards to the older set finding their life's purpose later in life as opposed to earlier? Are there more people over 50 who have not, or are you seeing maybe that they have?
Well, one of the things that we talk a lot about in the book, Richard, is the fact that we believe that it's never too late or too soon to live your dream, you know? And one of the things that we have both experienced and then in a number of studies and programs and things that we've done for a long time, we've come to believe that individuals come in with their dream, you know? It's in the DNA of the being. And it's interesting because indigenous cultures, when a child was born, one of the things that the shaman or wise members of the tribe, one of their jobs was to identify what the gift was that this child, the unique gift this child was bringing to the tribe or to the community.
Mm-hmm.
So in our belief system, we come in with it. Now, in contemporary Western society, we do an awful lot, consciously or not, to snuff that dream out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we do a lot to turn that child into an economic engine, somebody who will fit into the post-industrial revolution world. So we don't encourage true individuality and uniqueness in children. We encourage conformity and mimicry. So that the beauty of that innocence often gets buried. But one of the nice things about this time of life being the 50 and over period, is that a lot of people, having chased the carrots and run the loops and exhausted the illusions and the dreams, they start to remember that they had a dream once. That maybe it's important that they live it, that they act on it and engage in it. And so we find that a lot of people dust off those paintbrushes or relift the cover of the piano or take out those old notebooks that are filled with some ideas about a play or a novel or a business venture that they wanted to create. So while there aren't as many people, I think, that are as lucky as you, or in some ways, Sedina and me, to have discovered our passions earlier and practiced them, there are a lot of people at this time of life who are. Now, there are also a lot of people who don't. Michael Mead, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a mythologist and a storyteller, and he has a wonderful description. He says that as people age, they fall into two groups, olders and elders. Olders are those who have aged chronologically, but they haven't been in touch with their dream. They haven't met the obstacles and the challenges and therefore developed genuine wisdom that entitles them to elderhood. Whereas elders, whether they've been connected all of their lives or portions of it, have touched into that dream, they've met some challenges, they've earned their stripes, and therefore they're entitled to that position of wisdom in the community.
Yeah, I'll have to wonder if I was or was not done a service back when I was 21, and I have been as curious as I was then. And someone said to me, "Richard, you're wise beyond your years." And they were serious. I mean, there was no pun intended. But it got me to thinking. I've got to make sure that I try to maintain that, because I think that what's really helped is that one. There's a quote that says, "It is best to begin in doubt and end in certainty than to begin in certainty and end in doubt."
Yes.
There was another one they threw my way also that was, "It is best to be thought a fool than to open the mouth and remove all doubt." And even for the older folks, sometimes that's good advice as well, because I've run across quite a few. But you mentioned something rather interesting. Tell me, what is your, and it sounds like Sadina's on the line with us.
Yep.
Yeah, hi, Richard. I didn't want to interrupt.
Oh, no. Sure. Well, you may be able to enlighten us in this particular area, because I have been absolutely curious as all get out about the folks who are, and even though I'm only 53, who are older than I am. And I never really looked at folks older than me in this context until I reached the age of 50, that what I call my halfway mark. Sadina, you haven't heard that I'm supposed to outlive my great grandmother. And I was telling people this, and she was 90 at the time. She lived to be 100. And all during that decade, I kept saying, "I'm going to outlive my great grandmother," but she's making it really hard. But
that's wonderful.
Well, there's an aspect of us getting older that I want to touch upon. And George, you touched upon it already in terms of the wisdom that we are supposed to have as we get older. And the concept, and this kind of goes into ritual and tradition, maybe a little ceremony, the concept of, on the female side, the old crone. And there is absolutely no denigration or disrespect in that term, because the crone, from what I understand, actually is a very high seat, if you will, in the tribe. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. Well, I think there's many people that there's a book. I'm going up on the name. Dances with Wolves, and she speaks about that a lot. But I was just telling somebody the other day. We live in Santa Fe, and wherever I go, I see these women with gray hair. You know, these women here, a lot more people here going natural,
mm-hmm.
come toward me, and they are prone. And can you hear me, Richard?
Yes, I'm hearing you just fine.
Okay, great. George was just pointing to see if you could hear me. Anyway, that's a revered time of life, absolutely. You know, and I think that part of the reverence comes from the connection with the earth that a crone has. It's someone who has really connected with who she is as part of the earth's wisdom. She is just connecting with that. And it's a really wonderful thing for all of us to look at, and it can ground us at this time of life. And when we can drop our doubts and insufficiencies and connect with nature, which will give us a lot of comfort, really. So to me, a crone is like the ultimate. You've come to a place in your life where you honor who you are, that there's nothing wrong with being who you are. Our society teaches us to resist aging, mm-hmm. and all of its physical signs, you know?
Yeah.
Push our feelings down and try to fix ourselves, make ourselves into something we once were, or to look younger, or look at younger images as good, and our image now not so good, which, of course, is an illusion.
Right.
So we come to reject ourselves rather than accept the beauty of the present, where we are. And I think that's why so many people have such a hard time looking at their own death.
Yeah.
They've not been in touch with reality for so long, the real reality. You
yeah.
know? And a crone, I look at them as like, you know, the rose. To me, a bud of a rose is really quite beautiful. But the truth is, my favorite stage of a rose is the last stage. It's just so wonderful. Don't you agree, Richard? It's just so beautiful. It's completely unfolding in its bloom, and it's all that it is. And that's what a crone is to me.
Well, now, what is the male equivalent of the crone?
Shaman.
Well, a shaman, or
okay.
or the wise elder, or the council member, or you know, any of those kinds of,
or a wizard, actually,
or
I like
yeah,
that
the magician, the wizard. Sure,
I like the hat.
Yeah.
Well, now
yeah.
it's interesting because what you said, Sedina, about our appearance a year ago. I had to stop shaving because I had bruised my right hand, my shaving hand. I couldn't bend my elbow. And so I had to let it go. And as I went one week after the next, I started looking in the mirror going, I haven't grown a beard for 30 plus years. I wonder what it looks like. And so I let it grow out. And then when I started getting it trimmed, and I also shave my head, and the head did not look good, so I keep that shaved. But I went to a barber and I had him keep my beard trimmed and everything, and people with and there's a lot of gray in it and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And people were telling me that I looked younger with it, which
Ooh.
Was a little perplexing to me because of the gray. But then I spent about 5 or 10 minutes looking in the mirror going, okay, do I really look? And I looked and I looked and I looked and I guess I really do. You know, I think that mine, in my case, I guess just it actually adds to any expressions that I have. It moves with that expression. Maybe that's part of it as well. But I think that I didn't have a problem with the gray. I have no interest in going to the drugstore and grabbing this, you know, men's Grecian, whatever it is, to color it so that it goes back to the natural brown. I like the way, a matter of fact, I was telling people, I'm looking for that professorial look. But
yeah, well, you are a man. It is a little different for women.
Sure, but what you're saying about the women in Santa Fe, and we have the same situation here in Santa Barbara as well. We have women walking around here who have to be in their 60s, 70s, maybe their 80s. And I have to tell you, there are some very attractive 80-year-old women out here. Because they've taken care of themselves, but they've let the hair grow long, and it's
yeah.
gray to white, and they walk upright and proud and with confidence. You know, it is actually quite extraordinary that they haven't bought into or they've finally let go of the myths that we've been taught both as men and women.
This myth of youth is yeah. so entrenched in everything that we do. It takes courage for a woman or a man, I think, to just say, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be measured by that same standard.
Yeah.
Aging much younger person is. And let's face it, that blue color that you get when you get really old is not very attractive. I think the gray is very beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have no idea if it's going to continue to get grayer and grayer, my beard that is. To white, but you know it doesn't matter.
Could I give you a hint, Richard?
Sure.
It's going to get grayer and grayer until it's some shade of white, anyway.
Right.
You know?
So. Well, but to me, you know, what's really funny is even as a young kid and a teenager, for some reason, I used to listen to conversations with adults. I wasn't a part of it. I was just sort of eavesdropping and so forth. And I used to listen to their conversations, the things that they would talk about, and thinking, my God, their world is so complicated. But at the same time, I have always looked forward to not to – I have looked forward to getting older, to maturing in that respect, to better understanding who I am and the people around me and how to better relate to accomplish the things that we all want.
Well, and that ultimately is, you know, what the theme of this book is about, the whole idea of, you know, it's a guide to living consciously and aging wisely. And you just defined that, you know, it's a path that doesn't end. It's a path that winds its way in all kinds of directions and up and down hills. And each new geography we come to gives us a new dimension. And ultimately, it helps us paint a really remarkable picture of what the world is.
Absolutely. I'm very excited to have the two of you on the program today, and we're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about the book, which is Do Not Go Quietly. And George and Sedina Campanelli are our guests, and we are going to continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best.
And we are back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are trying to understand this this process, George and Sedina Campanelli, this process of the fact that it happens to all of us. None of us escape it. My father told me a lot of things, but one of the things that I remember that he told me was that nobody gets out of this world alive, which, in a manner of speaking, is true. That's true. But I think most of us would like to be able to leave this world quietly, meaning, and this is where we'll make the distinction between Do Not Go Quietly, your book, and going quietly, meaning that one day with that poem about not leaving this world with a body that is well-kept and beautiful and immaculately dressed and so forth, but is actually well-worn, and you're running to home plate with a glass of champagne in one hand and a fistful of chocolates in the other, and you slide in there going, Yahoo, what a ride. But hopefully that we do it in our sleep and not through some catastrophe. That's kind of what I'm talking about going quietly.
Well, I think we tend, people who conclude their journeys with that sense of spirit, that sense of completion, are those that have really dug in while they've been here. You know, they haven't been timid flowers. They haven't shrunk from some of the challenges and the adventures of. So, as a result, they get to the end of the journey, and they can kind of put their feet up, and they can say to themselves, I did what I came here to do.
Right.
And that's a beautiful thing. To not do that has, and that's where some of that myth of youth and the obsession with youth and the aversion to age comes from, especially in people that are not living their own lives. They're living somebody else's belief system or someone else's version of what life is supposed to be, you know? And so, of course, they cling tenaciously to youth and to the past because they're not doing themselves. If they were doing themselves, they would be progressing like all things in nature progress. They'd be going through the seasons of their lives and recognizing that each has a purpose, right, part of the plan.
Right. You know, some of this, too, Richard, you were talking about the quiet part, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is a quiet part as well. And I love Ralph Waldo Emerson put it perfectly. And he said, as we grow old, the beauty steals inward.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true. The body will age, but the spirit does not age. It goes on, which, you know, gives us, you know, so much hope that we're really humans. You know, we're having a human experience, but we're really spiritual beings that go on and on. And I think that that's almost something that, you know, it's just becoming commonplace that people realize now. And when we're younger, we have so many gifts. That's true. And we may lose them when we get older, but as we age, relating to what George just said, we have so many amazing gifts that we just didn't have access to when we were younger.
Right.
I know I didn't. I was going way too fast to catch on to anything, so or integrate anything. So when we stand in our wisdom and our experience, you know, and our humor, our seasoned knowledge, the virtues that are hard, you know, hard-won virtues, and honor all of these gifts, then we just have more to give. It's just like when we allow love to flow through us, then we just have more love to give. And the possibilities are endless. Look at your grandmother.
Yeah.
That's amazing. 100 years old is not going. It's going to be commonplace at some point here in our near future.
Well, I know that my folks are not far off. My dad being 82 this year, and my mother, I believe, 78. I think 79, something like that. And yet they're still going to the gym and working out and all this. It's, yeah, that amazes me. Still traveling. They'll come out to California for so often to visit my brother or just take a little time off and what have you. So they haven't, maybe they've slowed down slightly, but they haven't stopped is the point. And I think one of the most interesting aspects of our growing into those higher numbers, if you will, is some of the things that I've observed specifically about my parents, but also people that I have known over the last 20 or 30 or 40 years that I have grown with, and that is their understanding of things changes. Not necessarily changing political parties per se, but I think one of the most significant things for me was my mother. We were born and raised Catholic. I remember as a kid, and we lived next door to a family of Mormons. Well, you know, that's a pretty volatile, to most people, they think that's pretty volatile. But they invited me to go to a worship service one Sunday, and I went. And when I got home, my mother said, "And you're still going to Mass." You know, so I thought I was getting out of going to Mass. See, didn't work that way. But now, and in the last 15 or 20 years, the conversations that we have are so spiritually broad.
Wow.
You know, and at one point when I was 16, I delivered newspapers, and I got home a Sunday morning after delivering the paper, and went to bed, and I did not want to go to church. And she comes in and she says, "It's time to go." I says, "I really don't want to go." She says, "Okay." Well, a few years after that, I think it was in my mid-20s, I asked her about that incident. I says, "Well, why didn't you press? Why didn't you push me to get up?" She says, "Because I didn't want to push away from the church." Well, I'm no longer practicing Catholic, but I haven't, quote-unquote, left the church. It's just not something that, I mean, I have a great love for the ritual, the ceremony, the traditions. All that I grew up with is still a beautiful thing. I have no harsh memories. And I think that's what she was wanting to preserve. But she has broadened to embrace things that I'm going, really? Wow, that's pretty cool. That's stuff I've been researching for years. Boom, and they're my parents. And now my dad, he's kept to himself. His spirituality, he hasn't shared a lot of that with us. But that's okay, you know, because we're all a little different, and some of us are willing to share that, and others, hey, that's a personal thing. And so I think that's part of the how did I put it? Growing up in those higher numbers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's wonderful learning experiences. You know, our souls are empowered with whatever the knowledge and wisdom that we need to take us to the next level. That's what I believe.
Mm.
And so whatever that is for your father, your mother, you know, at least you grew up with people that are open to that.
Yeah.
And perspective, I just think, is everything, you know. If we open to a higher perspective, then everything can come in, and this can be a joyful, enlivened time of life. We talk about that a lot in Do Not Go Quietly in our book. It's a time of life to really celebrate and, you know, take those gifts and talents. I like to think of the old-time spectacles, you know, and look, respect, go inside to that good, good wisdom that's within each one of our hearts. Then we know which way we need to go, and we can turn this time of transition, you know, it isn't all easy, but we can turn it into something incredibly exciting and enlivening. It can even be sexy, 50, 60, 70, it can be sexy times. It's all our choice. It's our attitude, really, just like our younger years were our attitude, dependent on that.
Yeah.
So.
How about the process of working through a lot of the issues we've carried with us up to this particular point in our lives? It's like, all right, I still have these issues regarding, you know, my sisters or my brothers or the bullies from school. I mean, that was 40 or 50 years ago, but they still, you know, and it's like, where are we? Where are we going to release that stuff, to let that go, so that we can really not go quietly in terms of living our purpose, living on purpose for a better world for however much longer we have, as well as for those that we are going to be leaving behind?
Well, the way we've structured the book, it's a journey in five stages. And one of the stages of the journey deals a lot with what you're talking about, because the objective, I think, is to arrive as much as possible at a place where we're living in the present. The more we're living in the present, of course, the more empowered and engaged and involved we are in our lives. The more we're looking backward or dragging stuff from the past with us, the more encumbered our journey is. It's almost like the analogy is to decide to go on a trip, and you throw everything imaginable into your suitcase, and it gets filled, and then you fill another bag and another bag, and it seems great when you're in your bedroom, but when you're walking through an airport or lugging baggage through a train station, you suddenly regret having overpacked. This is a time of life for unburdening, and we have the book is really practical in a lot of ways, Richard. There are a lot of exercises and recommendations and things that people can do. For an example, there's a chapter on incompletes. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the incompletes in your life? How do you identify the physical, tangible things that you've always said you're going to do, or the projects you've started, and they're all piled up and they're incomplete and whatnot? So, you make a list. You identify all the incompletes. You cross off those that you know you're never going to do, and then you start doing some of the things that will clean that up. We have another chapter that's called The Gift That Keeps on Giving, and we deal a lot in that chapter with forgiveness, both forgiveness directed toward ourselves for the guilt we might be carrying, for things that we've done or stumbles we've made or, you know, harm that we've created, and also for the resentment we may be holding over things that we think other people have done to us or for us or with us. Because that's really like weight in our bags, and it's hard to go through life lightly, joyfully, and healthy in a healthy way if we're lugging all this stuff around with us. So there's a lot in the book about completing what needs to be completed, healing things that need to be healed, and we give a lot of examples because sometimes we dread the possibility of having to have a conversation with somebody to clear things up. And yet, the minute we get in touch with that person, it's as if the healing has already happened. It's not anywhere near as complicated, as painful as we think.
Yeah.
So these are a lot of the things we deal with at that stage of this five-part journey.
And just, Richard, if I may, there's also just some wonderful support tools in our book. Each chapter ends with three elements, you know, life rules, life achievements, or special achievements by people that are well known and some not so well known, and then life tools. And it's just a very supportive way of finishing a chapter and taking in the information and then being inspired to go a little bit further. In fact, it's a very good interactive book. If it were me, I know the book, but if it were me, I would do some journaling with each one of the chapters.
You know, it's interesting about that because at the age of 21, I was given one of those blank books. It was beautifully gold embossed on the cover. And that was around, I was my 21st birthday, actually. And I started journaling. And I journaled for maybe about 5, 6, maybe 7 years or something like that, maybe longer. And I have several of these books of my own handwriting. And sometimes when I go back and I read that which I wrote, I'm going, really? That was me? Did I really write that?
Uh-huh.
But I know that I was also very self-conscious about journaling because what sometimes happens is that these kinds of books fall into the hands of people that you didn't intend. Now, I've managed to keep them pretty private and sequestered, if you will. And that is the proper use of that word, by the way, folks. But I haven't journaled for, it's got to be at least a couple of decades.
Right.
And I sit here thinking, man, you know, I really need to sit down and do that. And I keep telling myself, well, you really don't have the time. And it's like, well, you know what? Like with anything that we really want to do, you make the time.
Right. I find the morning is just a wonderful time. I've been doing it for many, many years, and sometimes I go in and out of it. I have so many journals out in our, we have a guest house outside, and several times I've tried to make, you know, I've made a real effort at going through them and consolidating them into sort of a you know, just let's mark the events kind of thing, and then
right.
I'm going to burn them and let go of them. And it's sort of like what George had said. I'm really into the physical space that we're also in. Our book talks about much of this letting go and dealing with our incompletes. And I think one of the things we can do to clear up our space, and I'm not asking you to burn your book, but, you know, we have so many things around us that don't really affect us. They're memories. They're
yeah.
old things
yeah.
that we lead our lives with. You know, connecting with them. And I keep asking myself in my room, wherever I go, is this making me happy? Is this memory keeping me from making new memories, from
Ooh.
Being in the present moment, from being alive right here and right now? Do I need to connect with that old thing? Is that going to help me live a better life?
Yeah.
And I don't think that it does.
Wow.
So I'm actually going to do a ceremonious burn of all of these once I capture some of the salient points. I think it'll be something that will help me in my letting go process. It's just a suggestion.
Well, you know, that's a very good suggestion because, you know, we've always talked on this program about, you know, maintaining the flow in one's life. Now, the metaphor that has been shared with me by many has to do with the water flowing through your home, whether you rent or own, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You have the supply line and you have the drains. And if either of those is stopped, you have blocked the flow. So, and then primarily water is more akin to, you know, your finances and so forth, but it applies, it's still the same metaphor for just about anything. You have to make room. If you want new things, you do need to make room.
You need to make room for new things in your life and in your heart.
Yeah.
You know, and trust that it is here, right
yeah.
here in the present moment, that you can, if you can open to this present moment, you'll have just amazing memories that you can create. And this is a time of life where we can really work with community in a way that we never did before.
Yeah.
You know, and when we were younger, it was very, for me, it was very much about me. It was just sort of a selfish time, and I think it is, we're trying to find out who we are, and we're trying to get our work out in the world. And now, this is a time that we can really connect deeply and meaningfully with community
yeah.
in a way that we didn't have access to.
Well,
and they prove that increases longevity.
Yeah. Well, I think that the greatest example of letting things go maybe I should have let these things go was when my wife and I moved to Santa Barbara. And we had a cab over 18-wheeler moving van that moved us. And the way that they charge you is by the weight. And now,
wow.
if you subtract the piano, well, with the piano, 9,000 pounds of stuff.
Oh,
9,000 pounds of stuff was dragged across the desert. And we have been working a little at a time to hone down our stuff. And the plus has been that we moved into a rather small place, so there you go. But I think that we don't need to go to the extreme of moving and filling a moving van to see how much stuff we have, to see that we need to let some things go, because we know where those things are. And both externally, but also internally, like what you were saying, George, about, you know, dealing with some of the hurts and so forth. And what is really extraordinary, George, is what you're saying, what you said before about when you finally do meet up with the person who may have harmed you, and not that you're necessarily going there to either have them do amends or you the other, but you find out that, oh, it wasn't as big a deal as I had made it out in my head.
Of course.
Yeah. And so now you've moved a lot of stuff out.
Yes. And it's impossible, you know, it's just impossible to lead a bright future. You know, there's a joke about a neighbor that wants to borrow a lawnmower from his neighbor, and so he crosses the distance from his house to his neighbor's house, and as he's walking in that gap, he thinks about all the things that have gone on between he and the neighbor, you know, the time this broke and the time the kid threw the ball and the window and da da da. He gets at the door, he knocks on the door, the neighbor opens the door, and the guy says to him, you know, you can keep your damn lawnmower, I don't want to borrow it anyway, and he walks away, you know. So we tend not to be present with people as they are. We often are present either with people as they were or as we are afraid they are going to be.
Right.
But rarely are we open, aware, and intimately engaged in a genuine expression with another human being unless we put more and more of our baggage down so we travel lightly.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's a great time of life to do that. It's also a great time of life to one of the chapters in the book is about getting over being right, you know.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of us, as we age, we get calcified because we've done it a particular way, or we've passed through this, or we've passed through that. We cling tenaciously to the belief that we know it all, we've done it all, and all the rest of it. And meanwhile, there's a whole new set of understandings, of opportunities, of beliefs. So we encourage people through practical exercises to change some things, change the, you know, you grew a beard, you shaved your head, you know, all of a sudden the world relates to you differently.
Yeah.
You change the kinds of clothing, the colors that you wear, you rearrange the rooms that you live in, you drive to the store or the office or your church on a different route, and all of a sudden you see things you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And life becomes new. You experience the gift of curiosity, you know.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, I used to, when I bicycled everywhere back when I was in Phoenix, even though, you know, there was only like a 2 or 3 block wide strip of land between me and the radio station that I would go to, I would try to, even if it meant taking, you know, a couple, 3, 4, 5 extra minutes to get to work, I would zigzag through the neighborhoods just to vary the path, like you say, to see something different. Who knows who I run across?
Exactly.
You don't know who you're going to meet.
You know, another chapter in our book that is one of my favorites is crazy wisdom.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that George is saying, some of those points. Just doing things a little bit more spontaneously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Breaking some rules. Doing things, like you said, driving differently, going a different way. Crying, you know, just if we feel like crying. I was just in the store looking for something that we needed technically, and I saw this this flyer. It was at a guitar shop for harmonica lessons, and I've always loved the harmonica, and I've played it for many years off and on, and I thought, well, now there's something I could do, you know, just something different and unique. And I think of the Raiders of the Lost Ark, if you remember, when I think of Crazy Wisdom. Do you remember the place where his father was over on the other side of the precipice, and he was on the one side, and the Holy Grail was over there, and he had to make a decision, and everything in his senses and you know, everything around him told him, my God, if you jump, you're just going to go into the abyss. But he took that step. He had the intuitive hit to just do it. And as soon as he did, the floor came up underneath him, the floor that was invisible before. And isn't that kind of like what happens to us when we actually take the risk to just do something unique and different? Suddenly, you know, everything we need is right there underneath, you know, grounding us. And we're okay, but we just have to risk more and risk being curious about life.
You know, Richard, I don't know, there's a gentleman by the name of David Ogilvy, and at one point, one of the best, most renowned advertising agencies in the world was Ogilvy and Mather. And so he was known for being a wit and having a way with words. And he often used to say that rules were made for the guidance of wise men and the obedience of fools, you know. And the trouble with our world is it's gotten so damn serious.
Yes.
You know, everybody clings tenaciously to some kind of a rigid belief system, and there are arguments and divisiveness, and instead of focusing on solutions, we're focusing on trying to be right, and people are chastised and castigated for straying outside of the boundaries, and yet Thomas More, in his books on the soul, you know, the care of the soul and all of the rest of it, one of the points he used to make was that the soul doesn't like straight lines. It thrives in curved and unusual places. It loves ambiguity and mystery. But in our world has become so darn rigid and straight that we lose that crazy wisdom, that wonderful, irreverent humor and belly laughter that is so essential to life.
Well, a few years ago, I was watching the ABC Evening News with Peter Jennings. This was, had to be back in the late 80s. Uh-huh. And I just sat there going, why couldn't we have a laugh track on the news? Uh-huh. And then a few years later comes The Daily Show, which is where I get my news, ladies and gentlemen, and a good laugh. But you're absolutely right. And I have to say that where we live here in Santa Barbara, up on the hill above the city with our animals, we spend ever since we acquired our new puppy. His name is Angus. He's a King Shepherd, a black King Shepherd, and he is just the most playful, loving thing, and my dog has taken to him like you wouldn't believe. And we just sit out there. My wife sits there with a glass of wine. I'll sit there with a glass of hard cider or something, and we just watch them play and laugh at their antics. I mean, there's no politics, there's no religion, there's no right or wrong. There's just these two beautiful creatures who are enjoying life, each other. And I often say, you know, if we weren't out here, they wouldn't be doing this. So you realize this is our show.
For you. Yeah, they're so full of love. We have quite a brood, and we agree with you. I keep them around. I will always have animals to remind me of the present moment.
Yeah, my wife is the same way. She's absolutely the same way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap up the program, I have a question for each of you three questions left that I want each of you to answer in your own time. The first question is, and I'll start with you, Sadina. Mm-hmm. Who is Sadina Capanelli?
Sadina Capanelli is a spiritual, I would say, peacemaker who believes in her dreams and energetically moves through this gift of life. I don't know where that came from, but...
And George, who is George Capanelli?
I am a revolutionary and troublemaker.
See how good we get. We're a great compliment.
Yep, I'm here in this journey of the physical to exercise the some of the lessons and learn some new ones from any number of existences, and I am certainly not here to go quietly.
And I'll have the both of you answer this question. What is it that the two of you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
One of my goals of this work, first of all, is to learn. Secondly, to be an instrument of greater understanding. And ultimately, to create a world that honors elders and is much more natural and age-friendly.
Sedina?
For me, Richard, one of the things that I would put in my definition, too, my purpose is to encourage people. I've always known that's what it is. And so to do that with my husband, to encourage everyone at any age to embrace this amazing life that we have to live, and to really embrace the gift that we came here to manifest, our own individual spark of life, that our own gift, our own heart, and to serve others when we do that.
Okay.
Create a world where aging is a good thing. It's
yes.
A wonderful thing.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear.
Hey!
And finally, how powerful are we as human beings?
Well, I can answer that very simply. I believe that we, again, are spiritual beings in a human form, and I think we are as powerful as spirit, which is all powerful. I believe that we have the power to do whatever we choose if we are in love, which is what I believe we are.
I want to thank both of you for joining us here on the program. It's been a delight, a pleasure to have you on the program to talk about Do Not Go Quietly and the website donotgoquietlythebook.com. And you also have the Age Nation as well. AgeNation.com, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
All right. It's a site like the book for people who weren't born yesterday. And, it's filled with inspiration, information, engagement, webinars, programs, entertainment, radio, all kinds of great stuff. So, and the book, of course, is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all great bookstores everywhere. And it's been a pleasure, Richard, just a pleasure
talking
to you.
Wonderful interview, Richard.
Thanks.
Thank you for your great show. I love the title of your show as well.
Well, thank you very much. And to that end, as we wrap up the program, I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this time, love to Lal.